I was thinking about Yvonne Chouinard and Doug Tompkins' like trip to Patagonia.
Somehow you feel like almost a bit dirty as human to be here.
I don't know. I'm getting wiser, older.
Hi, welcome to the Vertical Podcast. Edelried decided to start this podcast to share the pleasure and freedom of moving vertically. You will discover how climbing has shaped people's lives and what they envision for the future of the sport and the places where it unfolds. Our hosts, Joe and Lena, two environmental activists, are ready to dive deep with each guest, uncovering their stories, dreams, and the impact they hope to make. Joe and Lena will take you on a journey beyond the climb, revealing what truly drives those who reach for their limits.
In this episode, I talk to Lena about the joys, difficulties, and potential limits of equine climbing, which is climbing by fair means, so by bike, public transport, or by foot. Enjoy listening.
Okay, so welcome to the Vertical Podcast by Edelried. My name is Lena Müller. I'm an ecologist and a climber, and I have the pleasure of talking about very sustainable topics in climbing as a part of this podcast. My guest today is Eline Lemenestrel. She's a climber and an activist. We will talk about the joys, the difficulties, and potential limits of equine climbing. Equine climbing means climbing by fair means, so climbing by public transport, by bike, or by foot. Welcome to the podcast, Eline. Great to have you here.
Good morning. Thank you, Lena, for having me. I'm very excited to be here and to have a conversation with you.
So we're meeting online today because you're in Brussels. Can you briefly introduce yourself and let us know what you're currently up to in Brussels?
Yes, so I'm a rock climber and a planet activist, and I very recently moved to Brussels to continue my studies. I went back to university to start a master's in science and management of the environment. And actually, I couldn't make it to Germany because yesterday I was on stage for a possible spectacle, which I'm excited to talk about at some point in this podcast. And so, yeah, it just didn't work out with the trains and couldn't make another travel fit into the schedule. So we're doing this online today.
So when you started your master, is it like, is sustainable a big part of your journey? Is it like, is there any event or inspiration that led you to promoting sustainability?
So yes, it's not only a big part of my journey, it's the center of my life. So it's the goal of what I want to do. This is why I'm here. I want to learn how to make this world more sustainable and to try to find solutions. And yeah, it's linked to responsibility. I took this decision to put it at the center of my life because I feel responsible, but it's not exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Is there like a reason for you to why sustainability is such a big part and such so important for you in your life?
I think it comes first from climbing. Like, climbing has brought me to very beautiful places in nature and very remote places. And so I had the chance and the privilege to experience this since I was very, very young with my family. So I've always been super connected to it. And from there grew the intention to defend it. And also because my parents, like both of my parents, work in sustainability. So growing up, it was like, I don't know, climate change was a topic we would have when I was, we would talk about when I was like five at dinner, you know, it was like really, really present. And, but there was definitely a moment where I took the decision of like, okay, this is going to be it. This is going to be where I put my energy. And that happened because of an accident I had where I was out of climbing for a long time and I couldn't even walk for more than a year. And so it was really like, okay, life-changing, and I had to reflect on many things. And I also had to learn how to be happy without climbing. And one of the things that helped me was to have a mission. And so that was definitely an important point or corner, let's say, in my life where you have two directions or three directions, and I took one.
Do you feel like this this injury was also the starting point of your EcoPoint journey?
It's connected, but I like to say it's my starting point of my activism journey, and then eco pointing came a little bit later.
How did that happen? Like, what was your inspiration or driver to go climbing by fair means?
It was a mix of people first. I'm someone who is very moved by people in general. I can get very inspired by the people around me, by my friends, by my family, by my loved ones. And so somehow I ended up being surrounded by a lot of Belgians and by a lot of other people that were also super interested in bikes. And then little by little, seeing all these people traveling by bike and living without a car and using bikes for their everyday lives, it made me change the way I saw cycling and bikes. And then also my injury was really challenging in terms of rehab. And so people started telling me that cycling would help and everything kind of connected. And I also fell in love with a cyclist and then I just started cycling.
Nice. When you look back on those years of EcoPoint climbing, what did you love or what do you love most about it? Or what brings you the most joy about it?
I think I just found a new passion, that is cycling, you know, and that's so much fun. It's so cool to explore and it brings so much meaning. So that's definitely a highlight. And yeah, I don't know, it's just a new world that I started discovering like 3 years ago, and there's so much to it. It's a lot of fun.
Nice. That's a really good answer, because I think it's really important to talk about that EcoPoint climbing can be a lot of fun. It's not only that you don't use the car and it's very hard and strenuous the whole time, but it's like it's a lot of fun to do it. When you I follow you on social media and I see that you spend a lot of time on the bike for climbing. Do you like train for it?
A little bit. I try to keep it lighthearted because I put a lot of energy in training for climbing and kind of like exploring training techniques in this sport. And so if I have the same dynamic in cycling, I think it's too much. And so my cycling training is basically a number of kilometers that I set, and then I just commit to do them before a deadline. And it's actually super cool because it brings a lot of creativity in the game. You know, I'm like, okay, I have 1,000 kilometers left to do in 5 weeks. How am I going to do this? Okay, I have to go to Italy. Maybe then I could go to Italy by bike. And then suddenly I'm on the road alone with my bike going to a business meeting.
Okay, nice. So, but does it affect your climbing? Both in negative ways, so that you can climb less or less hard, or also maybe in positive ways?
Yes, it affects every aspect of my life. It affects my health, it affects my body, my mind, my soul, my ideas, my thinking. And it's just a big thing, like adding this, it's like changing something that seems small, like the way I commute to go climbing. But actually, I climb a lot, so it's a lot. And in terms, I get the question about performance a lot. Does it change my performance in climbing? At the beginning, of course, like doing 45 kilometers on the bike at the beginning was like really tiring for my body. But that changed quickly. And this is also a lot of fun to see how our bodies adapt and how now I can do, I don't know, let's say up to 100 kilometers and then still climb at my maximum level afterwards, kind of. It depends also on the style of the route I'm trying, but that can work, I think. And so, yeah, there is an impact on performance, but that is manageable. I think the biggest impact is on my sleep and my health in general. Like, you know, before when I was not climbing, I was having rest days. And now there's a lot of times where I'm not climbing and I'm cycling. So the amount of resting time is has changed, and so that means I have to sleep and eat in a different way. And so that's the biggest challenge. Like, how do I make sure I get enough sleep? How do I make sure I give enough time to my body to recover now that I have two sports?
It sounds like a huge effort you put into this. I feel like we differ a lot on this, because I always try to make eco-pointing like very easy and very accessible. And if I see like the routes and the things that you're doing by bike, I feel like it's crazy that you're spending so much time on the bike and then can climb as well. Is there like any route that stands out for you, like any route or experience over the last 2 years or three when you started eco-pointing that means a lot to you?
Yeah. Maybe I can talk about one route at the beginning. So it was in July 2022, and I bought my first bike in April 2022. So, you know, July was like very early in my cycling career, whatever that is. And so I had an interview in Bukes, and I decided to go there by bike from X. So it was 45 kilometers, nothing crazy. And then I was trying this 8A that my dad opened in the 80s. It's called the Rêve de Papillon, and it's super short. It's like, I don't know, I think it's 17 hard moves and then an easy slab. And I got there super tired, because of the bike. It was also 38 degrees. And somehow, the endorphins that I got from cycling put me in such a good mood that I was able to climb way better than if I hadn't been tired, you know? Like, sometimes when you do everything perfect to send your project, you get to the crag and you're just stressed because, like, you've been resting for 2 days, your skin is perfect, you have your favorite climbing partner, you have your favorite t-shirt on and your lucky underwear, and you know you're gonna stand. And then the climbing spirit is like, nope, not today, you're not gonna stand. And then you're like, why? I'm doing everything, and you're so angry because you didn't stand. Well, when you get there super tired because you've been cycling under 40 degrees and you're just like, what the hell am I doing here? Then all the pressure is suddenly gone and you can climb super well. So that's something, let's say, it's a very nice silver lining, and I like to tell this story. And then a little bit of a more serious one, let's say, was in May 2024. So there, my body was way more used to cycling. And we did this project with my very good friend Solène and Manon, where we started from Embrun in south of France in the Alps, and we went all the way to Gorge du Verdon. So that's 200 kilometers and 3,000 meters of elevation. And we did that almost in one push. And then we tried this route called Damkuki, which is 8A plus and 250 meters. And we sent it. Like, we tried one day and then rested at another day and sent in team ascent the day after. Even though we came there by bike, and my bike was so heavy. Like, my friends were not used to eco-pointing so much. So I was like, yeah, give me your gear and stuff. And my bike was like, I think I had 25 kilograms of gear on my bike. And still we got there and we sent, you know? And so that was crazy. That was super cool.
Nice. Yeah, it's nice to have like this this love in a community for something. And if you then send together, it makes it really special. You talked about your injury in the beginning. Does it somehow affect your eco-point climbing, or maybe your climbing in general?
My climbing in general, yes. Some moves I cannot do because I have my ankle is not as flexible as before, and so sometimes I have to change the way I would do the move. And then my eco-pointing, not really actually, because cycling is just great for my ankle. So it just helps a lot because I can, like, I get some vascularization, like I get some blood flow in my ankle and my muscles can grow bigger without having too much weight on it. So No, it's not a problem for you quitting. That's cool.
That's good. Yeah. Are there any other like difficulties or complication that you have encompassed with eco point climbing? And if so, how did you overcome them?
Yeah, there's so many obstacles, and this is what the Impossible Spectacle is about. You know, we wrote a spectacle to talk about these different obstacles and how we learn to overcome them. But there's nothing. I wouldn't say, I don't know, they're just like, there's an obstacle and then you're facing something you don't know how to do and you figure it out and you find a solution. Sometimes it takes 2 days, sometimes it takes 2 months and sometimes 2 years, but then you move on and right after it, there's another obstacle, you know, and maybe, I don't know, now I'm facing new obstacles. Like, so I moved to Brussels, which is weird. Like, I don't know, I was in Innsbruck the other day with some journalists and I was saying, yeah, I moved to Brussels. Hello, I'm a professional climber. I live in Brussels. What? You know, like there's no mountains here. And it's just super weird to be so far away from the mountains. And the good climbing place, Belgian climbing place, is 100 kilometers away from Brussels. So it's really far, actually. And we still go there a lot, but yeah, sometimes we use cars to go there and we share the cars, but still we use the cars because, I don't know, there's like, we're in December and there's like not even 7 hours of sunlight and we want to make it work somehow. And so we use a car to get there. And so moving here was a big change for me because in Marseille, the climbing was 10 kilometers away. So, you know, there's a different scale. And I think there's a way, and I'm exploring it. But yeah, I haven't found my eco point routine here yet. You know, I don't know how this works. What I'm doing for now is I'm climbing mostly indoors and saving all my outdoor climbing motivation for trips where I'm gonna go by bike. But so I accept to climb less outdoors. But I'm not sure this is going to be my final solution. Let's see. Because right now I can feel that I just want to be outside, you know. I want to be outside and I want to be out of the city. And Belgium feels like a huge city, actually.
Yeah, it's very different, eco point climbing, like depending on where you live. Sometimes it's easier, as you say, in Marseille, where you have the cracks very close. And sometimes it's very hard. So if I understand you correctly, like you don't have very strong, or you have flexible ethics, like with your mobility, meaning that you also use car. You're not like really strict, like you never use a car for climbing or you never get into a car. So it's like more adapting to where you currently are and going eco point climbing if it's possible for you, like depending on your circumstances, like now you just don't have a lot of options.
I think I'm quite strict, but I like to say that rules are made to be broken. So, you know, I have strict rules, but I allow myself to break my own rules, meaning that I try to echo point as much as I can, especially when there's going to be media involved, where when I'm going to communicate about a project, I want it to be eco point. Like, this is the stories I want to share. And then in my everyday life and my everyday training, if sometimes I have to use a car or it just simplifies my life a lot, I do it without feeling guilty, because the system today is not made for us to live in a sustainable way. So it doesn't mean we should wait. It means we have to try to find solutions and to change the system, but without feeling guilty if we're not 100% sustainable, because it's not all or nothing, you know. It's just a trial and error and fighting against things that are bigger than us sometimes. So I'm quite strict, but I also break my own rules. And still, you know, I don't own a car anymore, so it's a big change. Like, I don't know, this evening I'm going to my mom's, who lives also 100 kilometers away. Honestly, like seeing how tired I am and how overwhelmed I am by everything today. If I had a car, maybe I would use it, but I don't. So I'm just going to take a train and then hitchhike or cycle, you know. And yeah, so there's some things that I'm very strict about, like planes. Like I don't fly since 2020, and I'm not going to fly ever again in my life, except if my best friend is in China and she needs me, then I will fly. But yeah, I don't know. I still allow myself some flexibility with the cars, at least.
Yeah, I can relate very much to that. I think it's a really nice way you put that, that you're having rules and you're allowed to break them, because it means being also kind to yourself and putting it in kind of a perspective. I mean, that is often also the argument, like that the climate crisis is a scale problem, right? So if you don't have the scale, you cannot change the climate. And EcoPoint has very little scale, very little impact, of course, on a global, if you look at the global scale. And I feel like it's important to keep that in mind, that it's not something that makes your life harder, but can bring you joy. And if it doesn't bring you joy anymore, you can be flexible enough to like then take the car. And as you said, like living now in Brussels, it's maybe easier for you sometimes. Why do you think, however, it's important to you, right? Why do you think it's important despite of this argument? Like, why do you think there is so much power in the outdoor or in the climate community?
I'm just going to wear my sleepers because my feet are getting cold. I want to go back on something you said, like EcoPoint has very little impact. I disagree. First, and maybe the biggest reason is that impact is very hard to measure. Who knows what impact this podcast is going to have? Like, what we can know is the numbers, like how many people are going to listen to it and blah, 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 blah. But this still doesn't mean, it doesn't measure the impact. You know, we don't know how many people are going to maybe try to change something in the way they commute because of what we're doing or because of other small actions. So this is a starting point that I like to use. Like, impact is very hard to measure. And so what matters is to follow what we think is meaningful and what we think makes sense. And honestly, I really think that redefining the way we go to the outdoors is a leverage action in our society today. And I don't see it as something small and a little niche of climbers doing it, you know. I see it like a tool that could help our societies to solve the ecological challenges. And so for me, it's not small, Lena. It's like, it makes so much sense in a deep philosophical level to bring more people to the outdoors and to do it in a sustainable way. Because when you start spending more time outdoors, then you develop a new relationship to what's around us and you reconnect to this. And if you're able to do that in a sustainable way, then it makes sense to bring more and more people because it doesn't destruct the outdoors anymore. And so it's just a virtuous circle where there's more connection and more people and more ideas that and different actions that come out of this loop. So I forgot the beginning of the question, but yeah, I don't think the impact is small. I think it's huge. and that's really exciting.
Yeah, so I do agree that there's a huge impact in that. There are coming a lot of positive things out of eco-commanding. I mean, that's the reason I invested so much energy in this as well. I just think that it's like, that's like one part of many parts. And I actually don't think we have to scale. So it has like a impact on global emissions, but I think we can simply agree to disagree on this. I think it's like, I think that's why maybe, or I don't know if this is the case, but maybe that's why you're investing so much energy, because you really do think that it's like going to change like the world. That's what I feel like when you hear you talking about it, that you feel like it doesn't have any limits, right? Because I kind of feel like I see a lot of limits to it. I see
like the limits of people having less time, resources, the place of living. And I feel like you see no limits for it. You see it can have a huge impact and has a huge scale. Is that right? Or did I misunderstand you?
Yes, no, it's this, but maybe because I zoom out and see the bigger picture behind ecoband climbing, you know. It's ecoband climbing is one small way of changing something bigger. I like to call it be outdoor humans. And be outdoor humans is just about spending time outdoors in a sustainable way and reconnecting to the interdependencies that make life possible because we spend time outdoors, you know. And so this is way bigger than going climbing by bike. But yeah. For me, EcoPoint is connected to this bigger goal or mission or whatever. And so, yeah, then it's just constant trial and error where I'm exploring things and redirecting and making mistakes and changing again when I feel that maybe there's a direction that would be more efficient. But there is something about scaling and about institutional change. And it's not small. Like, I think we need individual and institutional transformations. Like, I've been saying this for the last 3 years. In every time I'm on stage, I say this. And since like 1 week, I've been starting to see things in a different way where I'm wondering if we can really talk about individual action. Like, is going climbing by bike really an individual action? I'm not sure, you know. I think we do it because we are part of a social context and because we're connected to others. And why not seeing these things that we call individual actions as collective? It's something I thought that I'm starting to explore and I like. But yeah, then there is many questions that need to be addressed from an institutional and political point of view. And I'm the first one to say, like, this is not about the individuals. Like, we are in this situation because a small group of people took a very precise decision in a very precise moment of history that made our societies depend on fossil fuels in a very specific way. And this is a choice. And this was made, like, we know exactly when that happened and by who and why they did it. They did it to maximize their own profits. And this is connected to a small group of entrepreneurs in the UK at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution that were like, yeah, let's go this direction and then escalate it and let's remember this, right? Like, this, the things are like they are because of decisions that were made by a precise group of people, and that can be changed. But those people are very powerful now. So how do we change it?
I really like that you're talking about this because I feel like this resonates a lot with me because this is what I always loved about EcoPoint climbing is that for me, like what I see maybe as a big scale behind EcoPoint climbing is I always thought it to be like a stepping stone. I mean, it is nice to climb more sustainable, to spend more time outside and interact with people and the environment differently and have like a small adventure, but it's like a great stepping stone to talk with people about climate and about politics and about actions that we can change. So is it something that you can relate to? Like, is it essential for you to convince and show people it's great to go EcoPoint climbing, or is it more important to you to talk about like the institutional changes that need to change? Or maybe it's both.
Yeah, it's both. I like the image of a stepping stone because it's like something you start and then it escalates, you know? Like, I changed one thing in my life, which is now I use bikes to go climbing. And this changed me in so many ways, and it changes your thinking and it changes your body and it gives you this experience of change. And once you've experienced change, no one can take it away from you because you know it exists and you know it's possible. And this is something extremely powerful. Like, it's EcoPoint climbing for me is going from talking about the problem to acting. you know? It's like, okay, now I'm going to do something. I'm going to do the first step and get out there with the bikes, even though I don't even know what, like, a tire is. And I'm going to start talking. And then your body is engaged. And what follows is absolutely limitless, because then you just change so many other things that, like, I never thought cycling would change my relationship to my body so much, or my relationship to time or to space or to smells or to, you know, it's just like, it's really hard to predict before we start doing it. And then once we are in the action and in the experience of change, it's completely different. So that's why, like, a stepping stone is a great metaphor, because you start small and then it's huge.
Do you have any, like, tips for everyone who's listening and wants to try ecopointing? Do you have any tips on how they can start, and or what you discovered along the way?
Yeah, keep in mind that the hardest step is the first step. So if you're struggling, it's completely normal, because it's the beginning and you're not alone. We've all been beginners at some point. We've all tried everything we've ever achieved. And if you feel something that is calling you in this, like, follow it and allow yourself to fail on your way to get there, because, like, first steps are bloody hard and super scary, but, like, once they're behind us, then it's so much fun, you know. But, like, first steps are hard. And maybe something more concrete would be, you actually don't need much. Like, any bike can take you more or less anywhere, and you don't need the fanciest new gravel bike to go ecopoint climbing, and you don't even need, like, a cycling bag. Just make sure you have a rack so you don't have to carry the weight on your back. That's nice. But you can use a piece of rope to attach your bag on your bike and make it work. Still, like, cycling is a sport that involves mechanics, and, like, having a nice bike helps. But you can find a really nice bike secondhand for, like, a couple hundred euros. Like, it's... I would say it works with any bike, especially at the beginning. Like, anyone can try with the bike they find in their garage. And then if they like it, finding a bike that is nice doesn't mean, like, you have to invest thousands of euros in gear. Like, that's not needed.
Thanks. So you mentioned Uposable quite some times. Can you maybe let us know what it is and also how it helps people ecopoint climbing?
Sure. So Uposable is a project that combines cycling, climbing, and ecological commitment. We started it in two with Simon, and then we continued being four, and then six, and then 10, and then hundreds. Because Uposable is not about Simon and I. Uposable is about each of us that wants to change something and tries. And so now it became this collective project, I would say, where we start from the question, what if there were more bikes than cars in the mountains? And we try to make it possible. This is why it's called Uposable. It's U for utopias and possible to make them real. And then concretely, what we do is that we make cycling trips, bike and climb, ecopoint trips, where we adapt to the time that people that work full-time have. So we start from cities and we go climbing by bike from the city center over a long weekend of time to show that it's possible. Even you have a full-time job, you can at least try. This is our message. Like, everyone can try once. We're not saying everyone should do it every weekend, but we can try. And yeah, so this is 2025 is going to be the third year of Uposable. And so it's evolving and growing and changing together with me. And the main output I have now to share the message of Uposable is a spectacle. So it's a mix between a movie and the presentation. And it's actually a stage performance where I'm, like, on stage sometimes with friends, sometimes alone. And there's scenes that are projected on a screen and scenes that I play like in a theater. And there I tell the stories of you possible and I share practical tips to go climbing my bike.
Nice. I would really love to see this once. You have to come to the Allgäu at least once to have a spectacle.
Yeah, sure. Let's make it happen. I mean, this is a great way to support you possible is to organize presentations and opportunities for me to step on stage and do my thing, right? So super excited about doing it in Allgäu.
Sounds great. I feel like that's also such an important part of the EcoBahn community, that people who want to contribute something and feel like there's something missing, like as you said, that you want to show that it's then can be done. Also, like if you have a full-time job, I think this is like a huge part of this community. I remember when we did the Innsbruck guide, sustainable guidebook for Innsbruck, how to reach cracks. Like we had the feeling of like there is no information out there and we want to put it out there. Like the same for the EcoPoint website. And I feel it's important that everyone knows that she or he can contribute their knowledge, like being part of the community and sharing why they love EcoPoint climbing. And I think it's such an important part that you're contributing in your way and what you're good at and what you're excited for. Because I feel like this is something that maybe I strongly believe in, that people and that everyone can find his or her love about climate change, like find something they love about it and they can contribute to go towards a more sustainable future. And I really do believe in this, like people finding something that brings them joy. And I feel like this brings you so much like joy when I listen to you. And it's really, it's really nice to see that. Talking about joy, you also did an EcoPoint song. Let us know more about this.
Yeah, do it echo. It's on Spotify, guys. Give it a listen. I don't know. It's just, this is the universe. Like, what else can I say? I met this angel called Sophie, and she's from Germany, and she's so much into EcoPoint climbing as well. And then she contacted me, we met, we became super good friends in like 3 hours. And then suddenly she had this project of doing a song about EcoPoint climbing, and she connected me with two crazy guys called Flo and Flo, who have a band, and they are climbers and professional musicians. And yeah, she was just like, Eileen is also a musician, you should connect and do this song together. And then we did some little brainstorming online, and at some point I was like, you know, Flo, I'm just gonna come to your place and we're gonna do this live. And we had never met before, but I showed up in Frankfurt in his home studio, and he hosted me at his place, and then we spent 8 hours in the studio and came out and had this song. So it was just a great like creative moment. And now we're actually working on a second song. I'm so excited about it. And yeah, so music is just huge, and I'm very happy I can have it still in my life, even though I'm not going to be a professional musician, which was planned when I was 16. But music is still very present. And so this song just brings me a lot of joy, yeah.
Nice. It's nice that you're like combining your passions. I feel like that's really inspiring to see how you take everything that's important to you and then put it out there. Speaking of putting things out there, like you are very active on social media. Do you get, I wonder how to ask this in the best way, do you get a lot of hate about what you're doing?
I do get hate. I do. I just don't look at it so much. I just don't give it. You know, I try to not read the comments too much. Somehow I try to be kind to the haters. Because maybe they have a hole in their heart. I don't know. But to be honest, I'm quite lucky. Like I know other activists that get way more hate than I do. Yeah, but I for sure get a lot of criticism and pressure. I don't know. It's this social media thing is tough. Huh? Like it's a tool, a very powerful tool that we have, but it's also very ingrat, we say in French. I don't know. It's the opposite of gratitude. It takes a lot and sometimes doesn't give much back, you know? So handling it is definitely a challenge, but I'm quite happy with how I'm doing it. I'm just really myself on social media, actually. And I mean, I have some basic rules, like whenever I'm not sure I should share something, I usually don't share it. And that helps. And then, yeah, I just, I try to not, I mean, you said it, like everything is connected in my life, right? So it would be very hard for me to have a public figure that is me, but that is not fully me, you know, like a public image that would be something I constructed. So basically, I'm just myself out there on social media. And of course, it shows a very, very small part of me. But the part of me that it shows is real, I think. And that helps. Because then, if it's real, like, there's no good or bad, you know, it's just me.
Yeah. Do you have any, tips for people that want to become more active or vocal in their life or on social media, how to deal with, you said, also pressure or comments?
I mean, for people that want to have a voice and want to be more active, I would say find something that you're very good at and that doesn't take you a lot of energy. If you're good at drawing, draw. If you're good at playing guitar, play guitar. If you're good at writing text, write text. You know, like find your thing that doesn't take you a lot of energy, but that you're good at. Because then you can be consistent. And it's when you're consistent that you can really carry a message. And for me, like what I'm good at, I think, or what doesn't take me too much energy is being on stage. And this is why the possible output is a spectacle, because that's what I want to do as an athlete. And then, of course, I have social media because it's needed and it's useful somehow. But my media is a live performance on stage, because I found out this is what I want to do and this is what I'm good at. So yeah, find your own way of communicating. There's so many, there's no rules, everything's possible, and just then be consistent.
Nice, that really resonates with me and also with what I said before, that I really believe in to people finding their own passion and enacting on this, and that this is something that we are needing to have a more sustainable future. Talking about the future, going forward, what do you think the EcoPoint community would now need? Or maybe you do think it's we already have everything.
I think we need more support from brands. And we need more from brands. And more space to share our messages. I wish brands could really commit to sharing this message with us. Because till now, like, I've been doing this for a while and it's still hard to find money to make things happen, you know? And I'm going to do you possible with or without the money from my sponsors. But it's going to be very different if I get money or not, you know? And at some point, we, as a society, we need to switch and to make sure that defending ecosystems and defending sustainable positions is a way to make money. And we've talked about this together before, like, nowadays, in the business as usual paradigm, like, destroying nature results of income. What if protecting nature resulted in income? You know, that's what we're doing. You and I and so many other people were like defending what's out there. And so little of us are making money out of it. And this is a problem. Like, because it takes so much time and energy and it's a full-time job. And if we want to do it well, we need to find a way to get income. And I think brands need to get involved in a way deeper level. And here I'm really talking about all the brands, including our favorite or the best students, let's say like Patagonia, like even them. I think we need more commitment from the business side to support these initiatives and not only to give a couple thousand euros to greenwash. And, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I think brands are a huge part of what we need going forward, and also to have more sustainable stories out there. Is there something that you would want from politicians that we need going forward? Because like for eco-pointing, I mean, mobility is the big part of sustainable climbing, and it's like in Europe, the emissions for mobility like are still rising. Like for the last 30 years, emissions from the transport sector is like the only increasing emissions compared to like, I don't know, housing, industry, energy supply, or also agriculture. And the passenger cars actually have like around 60% of this transport emissions. So it shows a lot of people are still using the car. It shows the convenience, the lack of alternatives, affordable mobility. Is it like something, what would you wish from politics to change to counteract this trend of these huge emissions from the transport sector?
Yeah, here I'd like to go back on something I mentioned briefly before. It shows not only that a lot of individuals are using cars, but it shows mostly that our societies depend on fossil fuels so much. And this is, again, this is a political decision. And so the change I want to see is like some things are very simple, like taxing kerosene. The fuel of planes has no taxes in France, at least. Like if we would tax planes now, the French state would make 10 billion euros per year just taxing like the fuel that we put in planes. And just to give you an idea, like the train system in France would need at least 3 billion euros more subsidies to be something affordable and easy to use for everyone. And actually just taxing planes is a way to triple this budget, you know? And this is, it's just crazy that we're still in this situation, you know? I mean, it's crazy and it's also logical because those fossil fuel companies and lobbies have so much power that it's really slow to change and really tough. But yeah, and it's the same with the car industry. Like, it's also connected, you know? Like, these are really, really key points in how our society is organized today and how our economy is organized today. And yeah, this can be changed, and I really want to say it again, because here it's not about each of us as individuals. It's about the small group of people that took decisions that brought us here. And this is just making me very angry. So yeah, I wish we could tax planes. And starting here is just a great start.
Yeah, I can relate very much to your like being angry about this. I mean, the climate crisis is a decision that was made by people, that was made by politicians. And concerning mobility, there are huge efforts that haven't been made. And like, I lived in Innsbruck for 10 years, very close to train station. I live not in the city anymore. And like, we have a lack of alternatives to cars here. Also, public transport is not affordable. I think there are a lot of things that we would need from politicians to help support sustainable mobility and therefore also eco-point climbing. We talked about the industry, the brands, and political change. What would you wish from the people? Is there something that you would wish from climbers or society?
I would say to acknowledge our privileges and to use this acknowledgement to kick our asses a little bit and be like, okay, like, because, you know, and I get this comment quite often, like, yes, but you're talking to a community that is very privileged and yes, but it's rich people that consume the most and that have the biggest emissions and that have the biggest ecological impact. So if I'm talking to rich people, I'm okay. You know, if these are the ones that change, I'm happy. So, yeah, to really acknowledge our privilege, which is fine. We shouldn't be ashamed of it. Like, it is like we were born in this situation, most of us. And from this situation, like, to make something beautiful out of it and to find energy to give back, because we received so much. Like, I mean, we're white, we're in European countries, we're rich, we have all the food we need, we live in awesome houses and we have amazing education, and so if we don't give back, who's gonna give back, you know?
What is your, like, looking into the future, what is your, you talked of utopias before, what is your utopia for the climbing community concerning sustainability? What is your wish for the future and for our community?
I want that going climbing in a sustainable way becomes the norm. I want that this is normal and that, yeah, if we go outdoors, we do it in a sustainable way. And for climbing, but also for all the other outdoor sports.
So we're slowly but surely coming to the end of our podcast, and I would like to ask you three questions every one of my guests gets. And the first one is, what gives you hope in the context of sustainability? If hope is something you operate on?
Climbing gives me hope and joy. Like, I love climbing so much, and sometimes I do it just for myself because it gives me the hope and the energy I need to then give back. And yes, I clearly operate on hope. Like, I don't watch the news, for example. My mom is sometimes very surprised about this. Like, there's things happening in the world that I really don't know, because, like, if I watch the news too much, I just can't. Like, it touches my hope too much and I can't. So I do the minimum because I have to, but yeah, hope is clearly a key point.
Is there any topic with sustainable climbing that you would like to learn more about? And if so, with whom?
Yes, I would like to know how to interact with politics more. Like, here in Belgium, I have to pay to put my bike in a train, and it clearly has an impact on how I commute. And so I'd like to know if this is something I should fight for changing or not, or if it just makes sense to pay for these kind of services. And then I'd like to know how to have this direct dialogue with politics and local stakeholders. And with whom? Well, I think universities are a great place for this, because there's all these students that are, at least here in Brussels, like, there's so many students that have ideas and initiatives and that just start things that, yeah, I'm excited to learn this with them.
Nice. I will take this with me for the next podcast. Is there anything at the end of the podcast you would like to say to our listeners or share with our listeners?
I think I've talked a lot already. Maybe some gratefulness. I think that being grateful is key and is important, because when our hearts are grateful, we cannot be sad, you know? Because it's just like two feelings that don't really work together. And sometimes when times are hard and when it's the middle of December and there's no daylight and we're like, there's a new war starting or whatever, like, being grateful is just a tool that I love to use to make sure my heart is full. So, yeah, I'm feeling very grateful to have this conversation with you, Lena, to be invited here. Also grateful that Edelrit is giving space to this stories into these topics. And yeah, so thank you, all of you. And that's probably my last word.
Thanks, Aline. Thanks for being here today, for your time and your words. And thanks to everyone who was listening. See you or hear you next time.
Well, thanks for listening. If you like our podcast, feel free to subscribe, share an episode with your friends and family, and leave a comment below.